From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, October 18th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Chi Shawa, Toxic Newsom, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. Today, we chat with the chef de cuisine at In Boca El Lupo about a special five-course menu happening Saturday, October 26th in honor of Filipino-American History Month. Halloween is around the corner, and the Downtown Business Association is kicking off a scavenger hunt today, which lasts through to Halloween, when we'll see the return of downtown trick-or-treating. Need a place to store all those treats? Well, Trinity Church will have over 100 vintage ceramic cookie jars available for sale as part of a benefit. And there is so much going on that sometimes we need time to reflect and meditate. Self-Song Meditation is kicking off a four-class course next week to get you primed and ready. Those conversations and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk a yitin. Jin katka ke jin talk anakaya ha anikak gunish cheese.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kakwan Ish George Davis. And the word this week is chart.
Chart.
That means halibut. And here is a sentence.
Chart.
They cooked halibut for them all to eat. Let's hear it again.
Chart.
Halibut. Ganesh Cheesh to Rene Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kahuan Ish, George Davis was Takdain Tan and the child of a Tsagwe Di man. He grew up in Kheer, Cake, Alaska, and learned to speak well because he would always bring traditional foods to the elders there. As someone who fished a lot and spent time on the land, he knew Tlingit place names all over the area, and he learned many stories and advanced ways of speaking.
Tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. October is Filipino-American History Month. Last year, KTOO debuted a podcast series, Magakwento. It's a five-part series, and you can revisit that by visiting ktoo.org and look in the podcast section, or just search MGA Maga Quento, KUWENTO, in your podcast app of choice. It's also a great time to celebrate the month with food. And Juno is so lucky to have various food options available. And this next segment is going to make you hungry. Next Saturday, October 26th, the restaurant In Boca El Lupo is offering a five-course meal in celebration of Filipino-American History Month. I am joined now by chef de cuisine at Boca, Rachel Carrillo-Barril. Salamat po for being here today. Rachel, how are you?
Salamat. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So it's we're going to dive into this yummy-sounding menu. I'm looking at the long list of things that are going to be available. It's going to be delicious. But first, I wanted to start with your journey as a chef. I know you've been on in the past when we've had this segment, Chef's Hollow Hollow Talk, and you've talked a little bit about it. But I was just curious about when you got inspired to become a chef. Was there a memory that's like clear in your mind of that first moment?
Not so much a memory clear in my mind. Growing up, food was a very, major part of my memories and growing up, my childhood. A lot of things we did socially and as family and a community, we did around food, family functions. The Filipino community often did big, huge potlucks. So food was something that was a big part of my childhood and the culture. I think early on, even in high school, I was debating whether or not to go to either college or go to culinary school, and I ended up going the more traditional route. Studied biology with the intent to go to med school and all that stuff. But after college, I decided to just jump into the restaurants. That's pretty much how I got into it.
So instead of operating on bodies, you're making other food available to folks.
Which yeah,
you're working with a different kind of meat.
it's a little bit different. My education wasn't wasted. I used a lot of my chemistry and my biology education there. It helps a lot with understanding and being able to intuit what's going to happen in the kitchen and how your food's going to react. Temperature, acidity, and all those other things. pH. Yeah, wow. pH, acidity. Well, those are the same thing. But yeah, it's salt, it's humidity, it's a lot of different things.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And what is it about it now that continues to inspire you, the process? Is there something about it that inspires you and that challenges you?
I like to learn. So there's a lot of things to learn in food and learning how to cook food. And then there's so many different things to learn. My niche, the thing I actually tend to gravitate towards is Filipino food and then also fermentation. So I like to play around with that. There's a lot of different black holes of cooks can fall into. Sourdough seems to be a really big one. Fermentation is mine. There's baking and all those other different things that you can kind of learn to master, because there's so many different parts of cooking and technique that you can learn. There's a lot of things, and it's also growing. It's continually adapting and changing and getting better.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds really cool. What a great thing. I know there's all kinds of specialties. And so how did fermentation become something that you found yourself interested in?
It's more like, well, you kind of get introduced to it through pickling, and then you learn how to do some lacto fermentation, and then you kind of broaden that up, because the lacto fermentation is so broad. Pickles, vegetables, salami, charcuterie, that kind of stuff. And then I've started moving on to things like koji, where you can learn how to make miso and soy sauce and garums. And so, yeah, it's a lot of different things. It keeps getting wider and wider and wider, the scope of what I'm learning.
Like as you continue down the rabbit trail,
yeah,
there's more and more.
That's why I call it a black hole. Each part of culinary, of cooking, wherever you go, there's its own little black hole. Sourdough is one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I know there's also a hierarchy in terms of positions. And I introduced you as the chef de cuisine. What is that exactly? What does that job entail?
I mean, it depends on the kitchen. It's kind of ubiquitous with a head chef. So they run, make sure everything's working in the restaurant, in the kitchen. They manage the kitchen. They make sure there's communication between front of the house and back of the house. You do orders. There's a lot of people management, menu building, and that kind of stuff. A little bit of working in the kitchen, and then we start kind of working towards more of the managerial type of stuff, where it's a little bit more background and administrative.
Yeah, I see. I know. I think people get more and more familiar with it as they watch the reality shows. There's so many cooking shows.
There's a lot of
Gordon Ramsay and all the different shows that are out there that people are familiar with. So we see the yelling back at the kitchen in terms of the front of house and back of house to figure out what orders are needing to come up. And I know the food at Boca is, in a sense, made to order, right, in terms of how that works in the kitchen there?
Yeah, for the most part, everything we make all of our meats in-house. We try to source as much of our product in locally as much as possible. So when we get seafood, we try to use Alaskan sources as much as possible. When we can, we try to use Alaskan protein. So like we've used Alaskan raised pork before, Alaskan raised beef, and often Alaskan game sometimes too.
Nice. All right. Well, let's talk about this special menu that's coming up. There's going to be, just to remind folks, this is a dinner in celebration of Filipino American History Month. It's a 5-course dinner menu. You can get information on Boca's Instagram. There's a link there. I will also post it on the webpage for today's episode where you can look at the full menu and get tickets for this event. There's two seatings of it at 5 o'clock and 7:30. But let's make our mouths water and talk about this menu a little bit, Rachel. Can you tell us? And let's go slow. Let's go a course at a time and tell us what we're going to be experiencing next Saturday.
So we have 5 courses and we're going to start off small. We'll start with a bread course. The pan de sal is a very popular type of bread that's in the Philippines. Often you'll get these big, huge plastic bags, little round rolls, still hot out of the oven. And it's usually the first thing you'll eat in the morning with a cup of coffee and other breakfast items. The one that is being served on the first course is molungay, which is a type of leaf that looks a lot like a fern, but it has a very grassy flavor. We're going to be adding that into the bread roll, and it's going to give a little herbal flavor to it. It's going to go with coffee butter and a peach mango chili jam that has just a little hint of habanero chili in it.
That sounds so good. That sounds good. I don't think I've ever had coffee butter, but I want to. That sounds...
Yeah, it's just going to be a spreadable butter that is a blend of butter and some coffee oil that was infused, or oil that was infused with coffee from our sister restaurant, The Rookery.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, that's a good collaboration there. I like that. So that's the first course. And like you said, that's light. That's to get us warmed up a little bit. And then we move on to the second course. What's that all about?
Second course is a soup course. It's going to be the pancit molo. Pancit seems to be a very, one of the more popular dishes that people know of Filipino food, other than things like adobo. But what people don't realize is also that pancit's kind of the main word for noodles in the Philippines. So pancit molo means that it's a noodle, but the noodle type is molo, which is a dumpling. And this is going to be very similar to a Filipino style wonton. So yeah, it's going to have be filled with chicken and prawns, and it's going to be in a chicken ginger brodo.
Oh man, that sounds good. I didn't know that that was, I understood that pancit was sort of about the noodle, but I didn't know then there was some other things you can get more specific with, which is, it's molo, spelled M-O-L-O.
M-O-L-O, Most people are probably familiar with either pancit canton or pancit bihon, or a mix of the two. Canton is the egg noodles and bihon is the rice noodles.
I see. Yeah, I think I've mostly had the rice noodles, so that sounds good. And chicken and prawns will be inside these dumplings, right? Is that what that will be? Oh, that's
good.
What a good mixture. And do you do anything in terms of how you make the chicken or the prawns? Is there some seasonings there that you use?
Yeah, it's going to have some aromatics, garlic, ginger, a little bit of lemongrass and jicama, and some carrots. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay, that sounds really good. That sounds so yummy. Okay, so then that's second. And that's only the second course. So we got three more to go. This is amazing. What a night it's going to be. So tell us a little bit about the third course.
The third course is, well, we're going to bring something a little bit more Alaskan here. It's going to be inasal. Inasal is a marinated meat that's often grilled. The marinade is often a citrus, which in the Philippines would be calamansi, and a little sweet. And it's often very, it's got a bit of smoke because it is cooked on a grill. The inasal, we're marinating salmon wings, which is the pelvic fin on the salmon, which is found on the salmon belly. And we spice some elderflower vinegar that we had infused. And then it's going to go with a watermelon achara. Achara is the word for pickle in the Philippines. And what it's going to be made out of, the watermelon rinds of the for the pickle. It'll be much like it has a very similar texture to papaya, which is a very popular pickling item for achara.
Interesting. Okay, that sounds delicious. You're just making my mouth water, first of all. But then I'm also curious about how you manage, because all these things are so specific, right? It looks like it's not just like the fillet, and it's not like the salmon fillet, but you're actually taking the salmon wings. So when you take the, are you deconstructing the fish and then taking all these different pieces of it and making these meals? So what do you do with the rest of the salmon? Is that what you're serving this next week? Is the salmon?
Oh, actually,
or how does that work?
We were lucky enough to get salmon wings from our fishmonger, and the person we usually get our salmon from had a bunch of salmon wings, and they gave it to they offered it to us at a really good price.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you have a fishmonger can give you the specific pieces of these things that you need. Because I'm imagining, like, in my brain, I'm imagining the kitchen and the refrigerator and being so full of all the different pieces. And then you put together the menu. You're like, what do we got in the fridge? Let's figure out what we can make.
With the amount of salmon wings that we sometimes go through during the summer in our kitchen, we wouldn't be able to process all that salmon. That's a lot of salmon.
It'd be a lot, but that sounds so good. That's the third course. Inasal, you said, which is what that is, third course is all about. And then let's move on to the fourth course.
Fourth course is a little bit more, well, it's the iconic adobo of Filipino dishes, but it's going to be a little bit different, but not so different. Adobo is often that is in the Philippines, you will see it cured. You can leave it out on the table and it won't spoil because it's so high in vinegar and salt. So it's actually a process that's not too different than making confit. So we're going to make a kind of hybrid of adobo and confit using ducklings. It's going to be with Yukon Gold potatoes, which we're going to whip up, and then top with some chicharron crumbles, make a crumble out of chicken chicharron.
That sounds so good. Adobo and some crumble in there. What was it? How did you say that word?
Which one? The chicharron crumble?
Chicharron crumble?
Yeah, the chicharron crumble, kind of like a pork rinds, but we're using chicken skin instead.
Ah, okay. And would you say that, like, either the, how does it work in terms of, do we consider one of these like the entree, or are we having two entrees with the salmon wing, and then the adobo is like the adobo, like the main course, and the inasal is like the, you know, pre-main course?
It's pre-main course. So you have the pondasol is just a little light starter. You got the soup. Inasal would be like a small dish. Like if you were to come in the restaurant, it would be into a lupo. It would be on our like small appetizers. And then the fourth course would be a little bit bigger. I mean, it's still in tasting menu size, but it would be the main attraction. The adobo was the main-ish course.
Okay. So then that sort of completes our main meal, and then I'm imagining this fifth course is a little bit of our sweet treat.
Yes.
All right.
So,
Go ahead.
Fifth course is Biko. Biko in the Philippines is a sweet rice that is mixed with caramelized coconut. It's something that I grew up eating. It's one of my favorite Filipino desserts. And it's actually probably one of the few things that my grandma on my mother's side knows how to make, it, which is funny because most of the people, my family members on that side know how to cook except for her. I don't know how everyone learned how to cook, but it happened. Biko is, we're going to finish off our fifth course with Biko with a sticky rice. It's going to come with a coconut caramel, and then changing things up with a little bit of Italian, we'll make a semifreddo. That's going to be a banana semifreddo and something crispy, since a lot of it's kind of soft. We'll add a sesame seed twill.
Man, this is so good. So that is the menu, y'all. It's a celebration of Filipino American History Month. It's next Saturday night, October 26th at Imboga Alupo. Rachel Baril is the chef de cuisine and has just told us about all these courses, the pandesal, the pancit molo, the inasal, the adobo, and the biko. Did I say biko? Is that right? Biko?
Biko is correct.
Awesome. Yeah, biko. So you've got a little bit of everything in there. It sounds delicious. Some chicken, some prawns, some salmon, some duck, some sticky rice, some coconut caramel, like all the good things for a wonderful Saturday night. You can get information. You can follow Imboga at their Instagram, Imboga Alupo on Instagram. You can also go to their website, imbogaalupoak.com. But the link for the event to get tickets, you want to go to the Instagram, and it's in, you know, it's, as they say, link in bio. To be able to get that through Square. I'll also post that link on the webpage for today. So Rachel Salamatpo, thank you so much for giving us the rundown of this. I'm hungry now.
Thank you.
I know you're zooming in right there from the restaurant. I can see it in the background. Mm-hmm. So we'll let you get ready for dinner service. And we really appreciate you coming on the show and giving us the rundown for that. And it's great to have you on the show. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Salama po.
Absolutely. Okay, up next, today kicks off a scavenger hunt for pumpkins, all leading up to the downtown trick or treat. We talk with the Downtown Business Association about it next here on Juno Afternoon from KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years. With cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
The graveyard smash. They did the mash. It caught on in a flash. They did the
mash. Oh yeah, the monster mash. This is Juneau Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Fall is certainly here, and of course, as we approach the end of October, we're seeing more and more large pumpkins, tons of orange and black, and all the spooky lights and lawn creatures. And today, through Halloween, the Downtown Business Association has a fun offering for you and your family. Plus, we've got some info on the downtown trick-or-treat action on the scary day itself. I'm joined by Hollis Kitchen, DBA board member, to help us pack up our candy bags. Gunath Chisha Igudi, thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure, Hollis. Wasa Iti, how's it going?
Hi, hello again. It's good to be back. It's going
well.
Yes,
you were on yesterday for a completely different reason. And people can go and listen for that for the broad drive tomorrow at Bustin' Out Boutique. But today we're talking about Halloween, and this kicks off today a special scavenger hunt that you as a board member and the Downtown Business Association are putting together. So tell us about what the scavenger hunt is and what we need to do. What do we need to scavenge?
Yes. Of course, yeah. So it's called the Pumpkin Patch Scavenger Hunt. I know we did this last year, and I think we've done it a few years. But basically, there's, I want to say about 50 businesses downtown that are participating, and they have a little thing in their window saying, hey, come in and find me. And then they can go into the shops and look for a pumpkin. Some shops have like a paper cutout pumpkin. Some shops have a real pumpkin. If they're anything like my shop, they're going to move that pumpkin every day, just to make it a little more tricky to find. But everybody that wants to participate, you can go into any of the participating shops, pick up a little passport, you punch it 5 times at 5 different locations, and then drop it off at 1 of 3 drop-off locations to enter in for a fun drawing with a bunch of different prizes. I know the big prize is from Alaska Knife Works, and it's a Nintendo Switch, so that's pretty solid.
That's pretty cool. So you can just get started by, you just go into any one of the businesses with the window sign, and they'll give you the passport. Does everybody have it there? You don't have to pick it up separately, right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. And is it mostly all downtown businesses?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. And just to put it out there, of course, there's no purchase necessary. You're just going, you can just go into the business, take your kiddos or yourself. And because there's no age limit on who can participate, right?
Oh, of course not. Yeah. We have definitely some kid friendly prizes. I know there's some really great options, but we also have things that are for the parents and for other adults and teens and stuff. I know the Downtown Business Association is going to be posting it on like the Facebook and their Instagram and whatnot on the stories of like what prizes are available. There's a full list of businesses that are participating as well. So you can kind of, you know, pick and choose your favorites or go wherever you want. Yeah.
And what's cool is it's just like, did you say you only have to get 5 punches?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you don't even have to go to that many stores to make it happen. And you've got, today's the 18th, and you have until the 31st to turn it in, or do you need to turn it in before then?
You can turn it in on the 31st, because of course we're also doing the trick or treating downtown again, which I know Kindred Post started, I want to say 8 or 9 years ago, almost 10 years ago now. And so we're helping continuing on that fun event. So that way, if you are only out and about on Halloween and want to do the scavenger hunt then too, you can, and then do the drop-off then too. Yeah.
I love that.
They just have to be dropped off on the 31st, yeah.
Dropped off on the 31st, and the three places now, there's 50 businesses or so, but there's only 3 places you drop it off. You want to drop it off at Bustin' Out Boutique, which is Hollis's store, Alaska Knife Works, which is bringing forth that awesome, I mean, who doesn't want a Nintendo Switch?
Right.
And V's Cellar Door, which is the restaurant over there on Seward Street, I believe. Mm-hmm. As you're walking around downtown, this is a great, easy thing, especially gives your kids something to do while you're in the store. Go find the pumpkin. I love that you also move the location around. That's kind of fun.
I was a very avid and competitive scavenger hunt kid, so I know how to play the game.
I love that. And of course, businesses that are participating will have a sign in their windows to let you know. And so finally, Hollis, can you tell us a little bit about the downtown trick-or-treating. When does it go till? Or when does it start, I guess?
Yeah, so that one is going to be on the 31st because it's Halloween, and it's going to be from 2 to 6 p.m.
2 to 6 p.m. on Halloween. So you can do it all on that day, or if you're out and about, the scavenger hunt starts today. So you can be looking for those window signs and then go in and search for the pumpkins. And I love that they're going to be all different things. It's not, some might be paper, you said, some might be actual pumpkins, some might be... pumpkin, who knows what? Maybe there'll be some pumpkin candy. I don't know.
I don't know about that. I don't know.
Who knows? I love it. And of course, you said we can learn more at the Facebook page and or on the Instagram for the Downtown Business Association. They're going to be sort of promoting it all throughout the next week or so, this next 10 days or so. And so that's wonderful. It starts today. It's the Downtown Scavenger Hunt and, of course, the trick-or-treating that will happen on downtown. Hollis, thanks so much for hopping on real quick and giving us the rundown on that. We can find out more on the Instagram or the Facebook. Really appreciate it, Hollis.
Yeah, of course. Thanks so much for having me.
Up next, Trinity Church is holding a benefit with over 100 vintage ceramic cookie jars, a place to put all those treats that you might collect on Halloween. We'll chat with Betsy Longenbaugh next and get all the details. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher. More than 100 vintage ceramic cookie jars are being sold as a benefit for Holy Trinity Episcopal Church from 2 to 4 p.m. on Saturday, October 26th at the corner of 4th and Gold Streets downtown. 2 to 4 p.m. doesn't sound like a lot of time, but these cookie jars are going to go fast. I'm joined now by Betsy Longenbaugh to tell us more. Betsy, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasi Iti, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. Gunesh Chish for having us. Here's the story behind the cookie jars. The owner of Arctic Carpet collected many cookie jars. And one of our vestry members from Holy Trinity was in there this past year talking to her daughter, Caroline Chivers. And Caroline asked if the Holy Trinity would be interested in receiving about 130 unique cookie jars. And of course we said yes. So we're going to be selling these. And they're just a huge variety. You name it, we're going to have it. We've got kitty cats and dogs and houses and lots of just plain containers too. We're all going to be selling cookies. And I want to put a plug in for people who might not want cookies in their house, but have dog treats. So that's another option to use. Your cookie jar could be a dog treat jar. And we're going to be selling some dog treats homemade too.
I love that. And I know that these are all like different shapes, right? There's cats.
Every
bears.
Single one is different. Yes. We've got one that looks like a teddy bear. We've got, like I say, cats. We've actually got an old fashioned oven that is a cookie jar. It all makes me laugh because I grew up with one of these very old fashioned cookie jars. It's now sitting on my counter. And to this day, when I take the lid off, I think, somebody's going to hear that I'm getting into the cookie jar.
Right. And these are, we said, I think in the intro, sort of vintage, because you're saying they were collected over the years. And I know in the notes that you all had mentioned that these sort of types of containers became popular during the Great Depression.
That's right.
Is that when these sort of became really popular?
Yes. And you really don't see them much anymore, except in, antique stores, places that have vintage things. As far as I know, they're not being made again. And what's really kind of cool about this collection is, in addition to all these animal figurines and these goofy little houses and everything, there are also some that are simply containers that are beautiful. They have really pretty paintings on them. One has sort of an Asian motif. I would really encourage people, even if they're not planning on buying a cookie jar, to come by and look at them, because it's going to be a feast for the eyes for sure.
And so tell me a little bit about how they're being sold. Is it an auction? Is it their own price or what?
It'll be a flat price. We have a very dedicated member of the church, the same guy who was at the Arctic Carpet putting in our flooring, Bill Andrews, who actually has researched every single cookie jar and come out with what he thinks is the median price for that particular cookie jar. So they're going to be getting a good price because, hey, no shipping. But also it's going to be just a good price. So again, I would really encourage people to come look at them and see if they can find something that speaks to them, whether it's a cat or a house or even an old-fashioned stove.
That sounds amazing that Bill spent so much time of researching it and going into detail, because there's so many varieties, right? There's so many different things, and why someone would be inspired to make this particular style. Or I have a cookie jar I did find in a vintage store. It's more like, it looks like Winnie the Pooh's kind of honey jar a little bit. But you know, I can always use another jar, because like you said, they're not necessarily just for cookies. I usually keep condiments in mine.
Nice.
And when I lived in New York, it was the fast food menus. That's what you kept in the cookie jar, was all the fast food menus. So it's kind of interesting to think about. But I love the thing about dog treats. That's a good one. Or little kitty treats or something there you can put in there, which is kind of nice. Or just, they're so beautiful, you can just put them on display, right? They're just so, they're kind of such a unique item. I mean, you don't find like the quality of that kind of thing anymore.
Yes, absolutely.
So, well, thank you, Betsy, for joining us and letting us know about this vintage cookie jar sale. I'll give the details one more time because I'm losing you a little bit on Zoom. And we thank you for coming on and telling us a little bit about the cookie jar sale. So again, this is the 100 vintage ceramic cookie jars. They're being sold as a benefit for Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. It's from 2 to 4 p.m. next Saturday, October 26th. The church is at the corner of 4th and Gold downtown. There are shapes of every kind, cats, bears, squirrels, all kinds of stuff, Victorian houses, log cabins, teapots, and like Betsy said, even something that looks like a wood-burning stove. So that's kind of cool. If you want to look at them, you can go to trinityjuno.org/jars. That's where you can get an advanced peek, and whichever one you want, you better get there right at 2 o'clock and make it happen. So thank you so much, Betsy, for joining us. I don't know if you can hear me now or not, but I really appreciate it. Gwyneth Cheesh.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Next week, Self-Song Meditation will bring a 4-class course on meditation. We learn all the where and why, and maybe even take a breath on the air. But first, a little bird note. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
This is Bird Note. On a morning walk with her dog, Ari, near Denali National Park in Alaska, Denise heard an unfamiliar bird call. She asked the dog for an opinion.
What are you making that noise?
But no luck there. She recorded the mysterious screech on her phone. Uploading the sound to BirdNet, an online tool, matched the call to a northern hawk owl, a medium-sized owl that lives in northern boreal forests. BirdNet's creators, the Cornell Lab of Ornithology and Chemnitz University of Technology in Germany, trained the software on thousands of bird calls and songs. BirdNet uses artificial intelligence to make an educated guess at the bird calls in any recording. And Cornell's well-known Merlin Bird ID app now has Sound ID too. It's as simple as opening the app, choosing Sound ID, and hitting record. It can pick out multiple species in the same recording. These tools aren't infallible. Some similar calls can confuse the app, and they might not detect anything with too much background noise. Currently focused on species in North America and Europe, BirdNet is working on expanding to more regions. But already, it's amazing to see what these AI tools can do. For BirdNote, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
You're listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. It's time now to center our mind, body, and spirit. Meditation can help manage stress, enhance your sleep patterns, and is generally excellent for your health. And beginning next Saturday, October 26th, Self-Song Meditation is offering a 4-class offering to get you inspired and on the path to a lifelong practice. I'm joined now by teacher Christina Burry. Thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you here, Christina. Wasi'iti.
Hi, thank you. I'm grateful to be here.
I have so many questions that I want to ask about this. I feel like I also am already calm because I'm in your presence, so thank you for that. But let's talk about your background a little bit. How did meditation find you?
Yes, exactly how it find me. My boss actually introduced me to meditation. She sent me like a 21-day meditation practice that I listened to. It was by the Chopra organization, and I was hooked. And for years, I just practice meditation. And about 2 years ago, I decided that I wanted to go deeper and went and became a meditation teacher. As I was practicing meditation, I had such a profound benefit in my life, and my life evolved so quickly. We are all on an evolutionary path. But when you start meditating, somehow your life just kind of falls into place. And that's what happened to me. And I really wanted to share that experience with some people, other people.
So what do you find are the benefits that have you found that helped you the most? What are the benefits of meditation that have helped you the most?
Mostly just this perspective shift on life. When you start meditating, you start seeing life in a different filter. It's more like everything that's not really important falls away from your life, and what's important comes into this intense focus. And you have more time now suddenly for all these relationships that are important, or going out in nature and filling your buckets with nature's wonderful energy.
Thank you for sharing this course with us. And so tell us a little bit about this course, what it's going to be offering, and what you're going to be doing during these 4 different class sessions.
Yes. So for these 4 classes, we're going to kind of explore what meditation does first to your body, like how meditation is an antidote to stress, because all the things you talked about keeping us in this stressful environment. And when you start meditating, meditation actually reverses those effects on fight and flight response that we keep ourselves, which is a really good thing when you are in real danger. But most of us in our everyday life, we don't have to run away or fight, but we still keep ourselves in that stress response. And meditation actually helps us to bring that back and bring that stress down. So the first class is about our body, what meditation does our body. And the second class, we're going to talk about what meditation does with our mind, how it is beneficial to our mind. And actually, nowadays, there's a lot of research on that neuroplasticity, that meditation actually can alter our brain functions and our gray matter. So we're going to kind of explore and go into the research on that. There's more and more research about that and looking at that and just kind of going and seeing what we can do for our brains. There's some research that meditation can improve mild cognitive impairment, or some people who have some memory loss that can be reversed. It's good for ADHD in adults and children, have them more focus more. Also, there's some research about meditation's effect on Parkinson's disease. So there's a lot of research now that we can explore. And then the third class is actually a little ceremony because I teach primordial sand meditation. And the primordial sand meditation is a mantra-based meditation. So in the third class, I present the students with their personal mantra, which is calculated using Vedic astrology. And it depends on a person's birth date, birth time, and birthplace. And then at the last class, we delve into some of the spiritual aspect of meditation. And mostly I use the Vedic tradition because that dates back to about 5,000 to 300,000 BC. And it precedes religion. And I really like that because I like to teach meditation with a spiritual line, but a non-sectarian approach. And I like to approach meditation with a universalist perspective, including everybody. And also we go through a little bit of the history of meditation because as it comes from 5,000 years ago from India, but it goes through many traditions, many religions, many cultures.
I love that. That's so great. And I know I just want to remind folks that this is starting next Saturday, October 26th. It's at 11 o'clock. It's at the, tell us where it's at. It's at Ravenshala downtown?
Yes, it's in the Artico building.
Okay, great. And that's going to be for, it's going to be the consecutive Saturdays, but like Christina said, on the week of the 9th, she works with everyone to figure out what your mantra is. And I want to talk about that in just a second here, but the information that you can find this at, let me give you the phone number. You can call 954-415-4153, or you can write an email to info.selfsong@gmail.com. And there is a sliding scale that you can talk with Christina about in terms of the price for the class. And I think you also mentioned to me that folks who then maybe repeat the class can come back maybe for no charge, or maybe they donate a smaller amount later, but like it's really to help continue the practice. But this first four classes, you want to get everybody sort of up to speed and getting that practice going and giving them their personal mantra. But if you need a refresher or if you've lost your way in terms of the meditation, and you want to reach out to Christina as well at these numbers, 954-415-4153 or info.selfsong@gmail.com. You can get more information. And I think that's great. So I want to talk a little bit about this primordial sound mantra, because you mentioned that it is done with, you said, somebody's birth date and their birthplace. And then one other thing, what was the other thing?
The time of their birth.
Oh, the time of their birth. Okay. So, and what does that, knowing the time of the birth and the place, what does that do? Is that part of the astrological part of that, sort of creating and discovering what that sound might be?
So this meditation technique was revived by Deepak Chopra and Roger Gabriel. And behind it is the idea that the ancient rishis, these people who had the privilege of going out into nowhere, into the mountains, and be there for weeks or days or months in really quiet environment, they were able to record the signs of the universe. And the signs of the universe relating to the moon cycle. So there's actually 108 primordial sign mantras. So it's not really everybody gets their own very private one, but it goes with the moon cycle. So wherever your verse falls, you get that primordial sun mantra.
I see. Okay. Yeah, I was curious about that because I was like, wow, everybody has their own unique, because how many sounds could there be? But this, it's also a mantra. So it's something that it's a sound, or it's not words, it's more sounds, right? And you're using those as you're doing your meditation practice.
Correct. This is a Sanskrit mantra. So primordial sun meditation uses Sanskrit, which is a language that is not spoken anymore, but used in rituals and ceremonies. And they have that little magical properties that they can be a tool that can take you within into a deeper state of relaxation and silence. Basically, meditation is going from activity into silence. And that could be really challenging in our culture where we want to always do.
It's also, it's interesting because it's challenging, right? We're on the radio, and which is all about creating sound that is going out over the airwaves, that is going to be going. And, you know, usually in our business, silence means there's something wrong. That means there's something not going on, that some equipment has failed or something has gone wrong. But I'm wondering if in these last moments, you might be able to just have us, can you just give us a little silence, a little, tell us what we should be doing right now. Can we close our eyes and take a moment?
Well, if people feel comfortable, they can close their eyes and take a long deep breath in their nose and let it out with a sigh through your mouth. And one more time, you can pull up your shoulders up to your ears with your in-breath. And let it drop down with the out-breath. And you probably already feel a little bit more relaxed than you felt before. There's an easy mantra that we teach at the beginning of our classes. It's so hum. And with so, we do the in-breath and hum the out-breath. Normally, we just repeat this silently to ourselves. In-breath, so, out-breath, hum. You can just stay here for a couple of moments and repeat to yourself silently.
That's nice. Taking a moment at the end of a Friday, good thing to do. Thank you, Christina Burry. It is the Self-Song Meditation course. It begins October 26th, you can find out more information by emailing info.selfsong@gmail.com or calling Christina at 954-415-4153. Really appreciate you being here today. Gunath Cheesh.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you.
Absolutely. And that will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO 104.3 and KAUK, Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm a very calm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program. with help today from Craig George. Gunath Cheesh, and have a joyous and peaceful Juno weekend.